The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 72. And today I have another fantastic guest that I want to welcome to the podcast, Scott Armstrong. Welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing amazing, TD. Thank you, man. So glad to finally connect. I appreciate you, man. This is great.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been like a connoisseur of podcasts and whatnot, and all things that are outside of the paradigm, you know, even outside of the what's now been coined the alt-right. And Scott kept popping up between Grand Theft World, which he now co-hosts, and several other things. And then when I saw the Keen interview, I was like, wow, this is an awesome topic. And I listened to the interview and this is like fantastic. And I said, hey, I want to get Scott on, reached out to him. And it's great having you here. And I was hoping what we could do maybe is talk about your story. You are previously from like the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
And something in you said, I need to get out of here. So maybe you could kind of walk me through that process, like where you were, why you migrated. And, you know, the question that everybody has is always like, well, where should I go? What should I do? So I thought we could talk about like finding community, building community. You're ultra active in all those things. So I felt like this was your wheelhouse. So let it rip, man.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, this is what I love talking about more than anything, really. It's just like because I think that really is the solution. Like whatever, like the more I'm watching all the I have lots of friends that are into all the political stuff and all, you know, a lot of shows. And I kind of try to keep an eye on it just because like, I like to be at least like, actually I get most of my like political news from like memes. Like I'm in some meme channels and I just like see all the meme. I'm like, wow, what is this? Like some new, like I'm seeing like 10 different memes with the same theme. It's like, oh, I guess that's a story I have to look up. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah,
I try to at least like keep up to date with the stuff, but I can't stand it. And at this point it's like, if you don't see how obvious like the whole right left thing is, just it's all theater, it's all games, it's all just like then I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, but it's entertaining, like I'll give it that. It's entertaining, it's hilarious, and if we can keep that the attitude of like, yeah, it's entertaining. But then if you're reinforcing your own life and your family and your community through you know, surrounding yourself with like-minded people who are also trying to better their own personal lives, you know, and it starts like for me, like it starts inward, like with your health. Like, am I eating healthy? Am I exercising? Am I like, doing things to like, you know, alleviate stress and all that? And then I can move outwards and make sure that, you know, my friend, like, am I a good friend? Am I a good family member? Am I a good community member? Am I of service to my community? And then it's like, you know, and then you kind of gravitate and find yourself surrounded by other like-minded people. And that's just kind of been what I've been focusing on these last few years. And I think that that's the solution. You know, the solution is literally to create small pockets of community that kind of grows and ripples outward. But the idea being that eventually, if anything happens, we've got this like whole parallel system, this whole parallel economy, a whole parallel everything in place that we can rely on each other. And the more that grows, the more the system goes insane and pushes us outside of it, the more our side of it grows to the point where we can just be like, yeah, that's fine. Like you guys could just be over there being crazy. And we're just going to be over here crushing. Like, that's just what it's going to be. And so I have a lot of hope in that. So,
yeah, it's, you know, there's so much overlap because, you know, our tagline as far as like our theme is faith, family, food, and finance. Because for one, if you don't feel well, you're not going to do well. Right. Yeah. So you have to start at the fundamental foundations. One is obviously health. You know, our ultimate foundation is our Christian faith and a spiritual foundation, and that and all of these things bleed into one another and they intersect. And what's really neat for us, you know, we kind of strategically relocated 10 years ago, and it was under this entire premise of, instead of worrying about what to do every 4 years and pushing a button and then just like obsessing about that for the next 4 years, how about we look at what we can change and affect and what we can do every single day, and how can we tweak our diet, and how can we focus on our family and invest in our children and into our future and into our legacy. And when you do that, it's so fascinating. Right now, Haitians are eating people's pet cats in their driveway and all these things, right? And my son's building his dream home. And so, like, you could get so consumed with, like, Venezuelans in Aurora taking over high-rises, which I've been saying, hey, you should really reconsider this whole, like, concrete jungle and stack them, pack them, track them stuff and, like, spread out and move around a little bit. And you'll see that the predominance of the news cycle is completely artificial and doesn't exist in reality. Like, if you're out there talking to real people. And I mean, this is basically your story is the culmination of that for you. So you were originally like in the Pacific Northwest area.
Yep. So that was my little diatribe before actually getting into the actual story itself. But yeah, so I was born in Oregon, just outside of Portland. Well, I was born in Portland, Oregon, and then grew up a little bit outside, like maybe an hour southwest of Portland in a smaller town, and grew up there, spent my whole life there, graduated high school. And then I went to Eugene, University of Oregon, for a few years, and kind of wasn't really into the whole college thing. So I entered the workforce and then I moved to Portland for about 10 years. And I was in 10 years, well, about 8 years in Eugene after that. So anyway, long story short, I lived in Oregon my whole life, right? I'm like an Oregon Pacific Northwest, born and raised, like outdoorsy type person. And Oregon was an amazing state. You know, I lived in Portland from like 2004 to like 2012. So that was like, yeah, so about 8 years in Portland, 10 years in Eugene. But, it was a great city back then, like for a city, like back before, like I was like in my 20s, like a young guy, like Portland was great. It was fun. Like it was nothing like it is now. And it's really sad what it became, you know, what it has become. And just overall in general, like the cities in Oregon, that's the funny thing is like I always lived in the city or a little bit outside of the city or in a suburb of the city. You know, I mean, as with most places, you go 20 minutes, half hour outside of a city and you're in rural country. And like even Oregon, like rural Oregon is very much, you know, more conservative minded, more like rural self-sufficient type people. But, you know, I was just kind of lived in the city. I worked in the city. Like that was just always my thing. And I would say that my first kind of introduction to the value of community was probably around 2016. You know, I found myself in a place where I was my coping mechanism was not very healthy. I was drinking a lot. I was doing, you know, not really living the healthiest, best life. And I decided to remove all that. I decided to quit and completely get sober. I'll say this, the decision in a lot of ways was made for me in a lot of ways. Like it's time to change your, and so I had struggled with that for a few years. I had tried various different things to try to eliminate that out of my life. And ultimately, it was the power of community. I found like, you know, through the 12-step community without getting into any specific like program or anything like that. It was like that community. I started really, you know, instead of my previous attempts at getting sober in the past failed because I wasn't willing to put in the work. Like I thought that if I showed up to like a meeting, all of a sudden they call it by osmosis, then I would be changed and I would be able to stay sober. And I realized that that's not it at all. By this point, by 2016, I realized that I needed to do the work myself. I had to be involved. I had to insert myself into the community. I had to be involved in the community. I had to take on like volunteer commitments and really immerse myself in that community. And what I got back out of that was, you know, I had like purpose. You know, I became a value to that community and I became like a leader in the community. And I became a guy, I sponsored lots of guys. I was involved in all of these different activity planning committees, and that kind of for the first few years of my sobriety journey, that became like a core, like that became like my identity was like being like a part, like a pivotal part of that community. And I realized that, you know, I can't do it alone. That's what we say in recovery is that you cannot do it alone. And so I kind of really adopted that mental, that just became ingrained in me. So then when 2020 happened, you know, Oregon, it was a very severe lockdown. Like I was working, actually I went on to become a certified drug and alcohol counselor. So I was working as a counselor, like at an agency. And I remember like March 2020, when like the lockdowns first started happening, the mask mandate started happening. The agency I was working for gave me an envelope with a letter in it that said I was an essential employee. And if it were to become like full martial law that I had the right and the permission to travel on the streets. And so it was like literally my travel papers. I was issued travel papers by my employer, by the state funded agency. And so we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know what was going on, but you know, I'd been looking into government corruption, like all this stuff for a long time. And to me, it resonated more that this was like an authoritarian takeover rather than some crazy, you know, bug that was going around. And so I was like, hold on, guys, I don't think we're being told the truth. And so I was like, hold on, like this is not. And so that's when we started podcasting. I started podcasting as a result of that. But then, you know, my questioning of that led to me being outcast from my recovery community. I was all of a sudden the bad guy because their immediate reaction was to shut down all the meetings, remove everybody's access to the things that kept them sober. You know what I mean? And that was their first initial gut reaction. And myself and a small group of other people that were in leadership roles were like, no, we're not shutting down. We're like, this is what keeps people alive. I'm more scared of people not being able to like showing up to their weekly meeting and the doors locked. I'm more scared of that than any of this other stuff. Like I'm telling you right now. And so it became pretty crazy. So I became the outcast. I became the bad guy in my peer group. You know, this community that I had put so much faith in, like, you know, this is my family. Essentially, these people were like my family that I'd gone through all of this recovery journey for years at this point. And they all turned their back on me and I was the bad guy. So I was like, okay, so I need to find people who feel the same way as me. I need to find other people out there who are kind of seeing what I'm seeing or whatnot. Luckily I had some friends that were kind of on the same page. And so that's when I really took the community organizing thing to like the next level. And I feel like there was some really big synchronicities that happened around that where, so we'd been podcasting at this point and I had a friend reach out to me who, so I was in Eugene at this time, about 2 hours south of Portland. And he reached out to me about this group that was meeting up in Portland called the Portland Free Thinkers Group, which is still going on to this day. But they organized through the Freedom Cell movement, right? Freedomcells.org, Derek Bros, John Bush, those guys. And so they had utilized that platform, freedomcells.org, to kind of raise a flag and say, hey, we're here. This is us in the Portland area. We're the free thinkers. If you want to come meet us, we're doing these meetups. And they started doing these in-person meetups. So this was a few months in. This probably would have been like summer 2020. And we went to we drove up to Portland and went to one of the meetups. And we walked into a room. It was in a yoga studio and everyone was just sitting on the floor and we were a little bit late. And when we walked in, like immediately they were talking about like geoengineering, spraying in the skies. And then they were talking about, MK Ultra mind control experiments. And we were like, these are our people. And I just remember that feeling of just being overwhelmed with just like this overwhelming sense of just, I can't even describe it. Just like pure joy and just like we found our people, thank God. And so we were so moved by that one meeting that we decided to go back to Eugene and start our own little Freedom Cell. And so that's what we did is we went to freedomcells.org and we put a little pin on the map and said this is the Oregon Willamette Valley Freedom Cell Group, which is still going on to this day. And we started doing regular in-person gatherings and just people came out of the woodwork. Like it got to like, you know, we'd be doing like meetings of like 50 people and we just started just like really just. And that was really the only way I was able to get through the whole lockdown areas. Like we immersed ourselves with other like everyone just found each other and we did some really, really cool stuff. And a lot of those connections and friendships, I still have some of the people I still talk to every single day. And we have collaborative projects going on from all the way across the country still, like creative projects. Like one of my friends out there just wrote a book. Her name's Zoe. Check it out. She was a medical coder. And she kind of blew the whistle on a lot of stuff she was seeing behind the scenes. And so so I helped edit her book and she just got the pallet of her books delivered to her house today. So she was showing me pictures of that. So like that connection was made out of that group, you know what I mean? And so it's like, and to this day, I just know that the value of community is just beyond measure. So that's kind of a nutshell. And then I can tell you a little bit more about my trip out here, but at that point, I'll tell you one more other thing too. And so that was, I have this book here, it's the Conscious Resistance Trilogy by Derek Bros and John Vibes. I started reading this book. I actually got this from Derek because he came through Portland and he autographed it there. And I started reading it and he was talking about the whole idea of agorism, the idea of like, well, you know, exit and build to exit the system and build the parallel society. And, you know, it was like a whole philosophy like that I wasn't even aware of, you know, it's like, the New Libertarian Manifesto. He summarizes it in here where it's like all talks about the idea of, you know, different levels of density agorism to the point where our parallel society outgrows the state, you know, and the final confrontation that happens like at that time. And just a lot of what he was talking about in the book, it's like we were already doing that. Like we were literally doing that already. Like a lot of this, the exit and build mentality of just exiting the system. We need to build community. We need to create our own supply chains and our own, like, you know, we need to rely on each other rather than the system. Like the stuff that we were already doing just instinctually, it was like this book like gave like a language to it. And I was like, oh my gosh. So that really reinforced that this is the solution, because like not only were we doing it already, but it's like this, here's the roadmap for how to kind of execute it further, you know?
Okay. So you build this community, you have this group of like-minded people.
Yeah.
But then you moved.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was, this was 2020, 2021. There was, it's hard to describe, but like Oregon, it was just like all, like so many small businesses had closed down. A lot of people were leaving. I knew a lot of people that were moving to Texas, to Florida. I was pretty lonely, honestly. Like, I didn't really feel like, cause I'm a single guy still. And I'm like, I didn't feel like there was much in the way of like the dating pool out there. And like, I was, I was working. Okay. So I lost my job as a counselor for not taking the coerced medical intervention. And, I was just working like some like physical labor job. And then the podcast that I was involved with then, like I ended up leaving the show. We had a little bit of a disagreement. And like, there was all these things that were happening that was just like, I wasn't thriving there. Like, despite all that. Yeah. So that got us through like that got me through like the very acute part of 2020, 2021. Like we did this thing called Manifest on my buddy's property. He has like hundreds of acres. And we did like this little freedom festival right in the middle of August, 2021. And everyone was losing their jobs. And it was just chaos. Like we were out doing festivals, like freedom festivals with speakers and live music at the height, at the maximum level of like the lockdown and the nonsense. Right. So we were out doing so that stuff like that was amazing. But then fast forward through towards the end of 2021 and stuff, like I just found myself like not thriving. Like the weather out there is pretty demoralizing. I mean, I'm used to it, but then at this point, like, you know, the Oregon fall and winter where it's just rain, rain, rain every day, cold rain. I'm just like, I'm just not thriving. And all of my attachments that I had to Oregon started falling away. And, you know, I'd always kind of wanted to move and try something different. And I always kind of felt like in my soul, like I owed it to myself because I lived there my whole life. You know, I owed it to myself to get out there and try something different. And so, you know, I reached the point where like, I made a decision to move and I wasn't sure where, but, you know, Tennessee, I started looking at Tennessee and it was kind of funny because, actually I was going to go to Florida because I have a buddy in Fort Myer, Florida. And, I was considering going there and that was right before the hurricane. What was it? Hurricane. I can't remember. There was like when I ended up moving to Tennessee, it was like a month later, they got hit with that hurricane that just wiped it out. I'm like, okay, maybe that was kind of reinforced that I made a good decision. But, so Tennessee, I saw that they'd passed a law where, you know, people in the healthcare industry weren't going to be compelled to take an experimental procedure or whatever intervention. And so I was like, well, that's pretty cool because, you know, I was a certified counselor. I had my certification and I was planning on going back into that line of work. And, I did some research about which states I had reciprocity with, Texas. I would have had both Texas and Florida. I would have had to have gone back to school to achieve the same level of certification I had in Oregon, but in Tennessee, it looked like mine would transfer straight across and that I can just go and I could probably get right back to work in that field. So, that was like one of the main deals that sealed it. And originally I was looking at Chattanooga because there's a big freedom cell community there in Chattanooga.
I did a year of college in Chattanooga.
Oh, cool.
Tennessee Temple. I really like that area.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been out there like, you know, camping and rafting on the Ocoee. I've done that a few years in a row now, but, So Tennessee was just calling me, you know? And, And so then Ryan from Last American Vagabond, I'd reached out because I'd interviewed him on my show before. And so I reached out to him and said, hey, man, I may be moving out to Tennessee, Chattanooga. I'll be driving out there. I'd love to like have lunch with you. I'd stop in Nashville and have lunch with you or something. He's like, okay, cool. And then a couple days later, out of the blue, he texted me and he goes, you know, actually, you know, I could use some help with some stuff. If you ever end up in Nashville, I could, you know, I could use some help. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to Nashville. Now is it. Yeah.
Cool.
And so, yeah, I just packed up and it's just so serendipitous how everything worked out. Like I met this amazing guy at one of our little Freedom Cell meetups, who's like this inventor type guy. He's like this older gentleman, and he was working on this off-grid heating system using like rocket stoves and water tanks and stuff. And he needed help, and so he offered to let me live there rent free for a few months while I saved up money for my move. And I just helped him tinker with all of his inventions and stuff, and like him and I became really close friends, and just like all these things just kind of coalesced where it was just, I felt like it was like the universe was just nudging me down the road, and it's just like, here you go. And it's the best decision I ever made, man. Like I can't even tell you.
So like how many miles are we talking about?
I don't know, honestly. So I took the scenic route. So I ended up going down through Texas. We went, like, I actually traveled with another friend, actually the gal who wrote the book. She was moving also. She ended up moving to Texas temporarily. She's back in Oregon now. She ended up having to go back. But we decided to caravan, and there was this festival right outside of Austin called Float Fest. That was that happened in 2022, and we decided to kind of time our adventure to where we were able to attend Float Fest on the way, and we just kind of took our time, you know what I mean, and took the scenic route down through like New Mexico, Arizona, and then spent like a week and a half in Texas. And yeah, it was cool. But I think overall, I mean, I don't know how many miles it was, but it took about 2 weeks for me to get from Oregon to, but that was being very leisurely and stopping for a week long festival along the way. But yeah.
So you got this offer from the Last American Vagabond.
Yeah.
To work with him. And I know that you're kind of currently doing your own thing. So yeah. What I always find fascinating is there'll always be different links in the chain that, you know, our story is similar in the sense that, you know, we felt the call to move. And
where did you guys move from?
So we moved from like the Northeast, like Philly area.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And we moved 10 years ago, and, you know, it's so interesting because like, yeah, well, who do you know in Texas? And we had a similar story in the sense of we were originally planning on moving to Oklahoma, and it was, we had planned a vacation to Oklahoma to visit the area. And it was that one town that, I forget which town got leveled by like a Cat 5 tornado. Wow. And we were planning this trip, and then literally right before we took the trip, it got leveled. And, you know, I wasn't really worried about it. My wife's like, oh no, I don't like tornadoes. You know, maybe we should reconsider. So then we started looking at Texas, and I'm talking to my local friends at the time. And they're like, Texas, who do you know in Texas? What do you know in Texas? I don't know anybody in Texas. I don't know anything about Texas. Well, what are you going to do for work? You know? And I'm like, I don't know. I work hard. I pay attention. I try to fill a need. I try to fill in gaps and whatnot. So like, I think one of the biggest things with relocation and building community, because it's exactly like building community, is relocating. Cause everybody's always so worried about like, well, what am I going to do for work? Well, if you bring value and you add value, you will always have a place to work, even if it's building and creating your own place to work. But it's the same thing with community. If you're bringing value to a group of people, you always have a place and a position with them. Because I think so many times, a lot of people are very interested in moving and they're very interested in being part of a community. But from my experience, a lot of them, And really, it's the government school system and the Prussian model. It's always been like, well, you're supposed to go and extract, you know, you're supposed to go and take. So find a community that has the stuff you want, and then you can go there and take it. And the reality is the exact opposite of that. Is if you want one, you want to be the community. You want to be the community that you want to have, and you have to have and bring your value to that community. So then people want to join to say, well, look, you have this value. I have this value. You know, if we work together synergistically, we can create more. We can create abundance. And that's my approach. And that sounds like that's what you're saying is if you develop yourself and you bring value, you can move. And in essence, your community will self-identify and build itself around you. Is that your experience?
Oh my gosh. Described exactly what my experience was. Like it's so long story short, I don't work as a drug and alcohol counselor anymore. I came out here and I was applying for jobs in the field. And it's funny, I interviewed my buddy Dean Reiner, who does a great show called Up Is Down podcast. And he's out in Oregon, and he talked about how he had moved from, he was a mailman. He was a, you know, worked for the United States Postal Service, and he had enough of that. So he and his girlfriend like got a house out in the country, moved out there, and he was just doing odd jobs. And he talked about how he had posted like a note on a bulletin board at like a feed store that said, I've got a truck, I got some tools. If anybody needs some help, let me know. And he got like so much work off of that, that he just like started his own little handyman business. And I was like, wow, that's so cool. And this is like right after I'd moved here, I interviewed him and he told me that story. And I was like, okay. So I went on Facebook, like kind of the feed store bulletin board of like living in a city, right? And I just made a post and posted in some local groups. And I, you know, just a picture of myself with a truck. And I said, I got a truck. I got some tools. If anybody needs some handyman work, you know, if you need like a doorknob replaced or a mailbox put in or something, because I'm a little handy. Like, I'm not like a specialist or anything, but I know a little bit. And that just literally blew up. It blew up to the point where I just filled my schedule. And after a couple months, I was like, holy crap, did I just start my own handyman business like on accident? And true, I've been doing it ever since. And I've got, and now I've kind of found myself like my buddy and I, we do like a lot of decks. Like we've been like installing, fixing, doing decks. Yeah, man. Like I'm getting really good at that. Like it's kind of crazy how this has just kind of unfolded. And I've got all these other projects that I'm involved in. I'm like making music, you know, I got all the podcasts and I've got a couple of like software tools that we're developing and just all this stuff. And, you know, the ability to kind of scale the handyman stuff in accordance with what I like, if I need a week to make music videos for this album that I just dropped, then I can just not book any jobs that week and do that. And if I need, like, if now I need to scale up the handyman stuff, I can just book more jobs. Like I have leads coming in all the time that I have to like send out to other people. I'm like, I can't get to this. Can you want to get this? I've got like a network of other handy people out there that, you know, and we trade jobs. Like I'll have a guy call me and be like, hey, I need help on this day for this project. I'm like, yeah, I'll be there. You know what I mean? And so it's like this amazing little place I'm in right now where it's just like, I can, and it's all completely autonomous and it's all cool stuff. And it's just amazing.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, my boys, my three older boys, they started this YouTube channel, which is now morphed into this podcast. It was a hobby. They were young and my son was getting really skilled at editing and audio video. And we were accumulating all of this tech stuff. And, all of a sudden, I think it was in 2021 or something, the YouTube channel exploded and we went from like 30,000 subs to 100,000 subs in like 3 months. And in accordance with that, the ad revenue went through the roof, our website sales went through the roof. And so as that was taking off, my son's like, you know what, I want to do this as a business. I want to do this full time. So he started ramping it up and we started scaling it. And then immediately what happened is we started getting all these strikes and all this stuff. And we almost got nuked. I mean, our channel's almost gotten nuked like 8 or 9 times. And right now we're completely demonetized. And our Stripe debanked us on our website. So we're in the process of like doing all this stuff. And so what the boys did is we're like, hey, we're going to take all this revenue. And they stockpiled it and they were like, we're going to start our own handyman company. And okay. So they bought a couple of trucks, they bought a work trailer, they labeled it out. And so what happened is that little bit of seed capital, they started doing exactly the same thing that you're doing, decks and fences and yeah. just anything that most people are like, oh, that's too small. Like, I'm not going to do that.
And exactly. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, one, it's so small, it's quick, it's lucrative. It's, you know, and once you're into those communities that are looking for somebody, the referrals are endless. Yeah. And that's, they did exactly the same thing. They control their schedule. So we also have a small ranch where we raise cows. And so we sell our beef locally. And a shameless plug, we do have two steers available in October. So like when we're moving cows around, they'll just you know, space out their jobs like, oh, this week, you know, we got to pick up cows or we got to take them to the butcher or we got a beef drop off. So it's the exact same thing. And they drive their own schedule and they're autonomous. Whereas, you know, if you have to like put in an application to get a job and then you're like, oh, can I take time off? And you're always asking, you know, and you have no control and you make what that position affords them to pay. So you're so pigeonholed, right? Versus if you are a freelancer and in this, and then, you know, the 2020 social experiment and the lockdown and the supply chain collapse, it just magnified all of this. And it just showed the importance of, we do need to all be decentralized. We need to all be somewhat of a polymath, or, you know, we all need to be multi-skilled, multifaceted, have multi-layers of income, even if it's only $5,000 here, $1,000 there, you know, when you're function stacking and doing all these things, when different things don't pan out or iron out and you have all these different irons in the fire, like, okay, well, we'll just shift directions, you know? And I mean, that really sounds like what you're doing is like, hey, I'm passionate about all these different things. We're going to try this. We're going to try that. Oh, that's working. Yeah. So we're going to pour some gas on that. This isn't working. Well, we'll scale this back. We'll maybe wind this down, or maybe 6 months from now, it'll be a better position or opportunity and we can upscale that back up. So that it sounds exactly like what you're doing. And you're following things that you enjoy and what you're passionate about. And then you're just drilling down into that. And at the same time, you're building community.
Yeah, exactly. And so here locally, I mean, that was my very first instinct out here, was like, I got the same thing that happened in 2020 where I was like, I got to find my like-minded people out here. And I was, you know, thinking that out here in the South, probably a little bit more like in Oregon, man, it was brutal, like just like the stereotypical, like, you know, oh my god,
yeah,
like, you know, with like the hair, like now I'm sure there's just nothing but Harris signs in the lawns as far as the eye can see, you know, like that sort of thing. Yeah. Like, so I figured moving to the South, it might be a little bit of a different flavor. So immediately I started organizing meetups, and one of the like under a few different banners of different like communities that I kind of had become a part of, and then I'm through a friend of Ryan's, shout out to Emily. She introduced me to this group, this local group here called Make Americans Free Again, which is under a gal named Dr. Pam Popper, who is like a lawyer, and they're suing like Eco Health Alliance and a lot of these government agencies over a lot of the nonsense. And it's not like a MAGA thing. It's just it's more of like a medical freedom group. And there's a chapter here in Tennessee, and they meet every other Tuesday night. And I've been going almost every other Tuesday night since I got here. And it's like, now I'm at the point where most of my work and most of my jobs come from my friends and people from that community. And so it's like, I don't even really have to like put any effort into advertising or getting leads or anything. It's like it always shows up and arrives, and I've got ongoing jobs and stuff like that in terms of the handyman stuff. But it's just, the value of the community that I found right here is just like beyond measure. Like everything in my life currently right now, the place I live at, I have the most amazing landlord in the world who I met through that community, who just supports the mission of what I'm doing to the extreme and makes my life so easy to, you know, being able to be in this house allowed me to get the dog that I have now, who's like the biggest blessing in my life. And I'm still just like, you know, I'm, No, man. It's just like, it's just the power of the community, like the gifts, every gift that I have in my life is a direct result of that. It's just like so incredible. Like, I'm just so grateful. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. So.
And I think that's another really great point is, you know, when you do make these changes, when you relocate, when you move thousands of miles and when you don't know anybody, everything takes time. You know, we moved 10 years ago and we moved with a very small amount of cash and we were under very different extenuating circumstances that prohibited us from doing like normal things. It wasn't like a lot of people that are relocating now, they're from California and they sell their crack shack in California for like $1 million, you know? And so they're moving with like this gigantic bundle of cash and all these different things. But if that's not you, that certainly wasn't us.
No.
It takes time, one, to get grounded, get planted where you're at, start to put your feelers out, start to maybe if it's a handyman service or whatever your value that you're bringing, it takes time to get that established. You know, you're in a rental property. Obviously, that isn't your long-term game plan, but that's never anybody's long-term game plan. But you take advantage of what's directly in front of you.
Correct. Yeah.
And use that resource and then you build off of that. You grow from there and nothing of any value. There's no such thing as get rich quick. There's no such thing as like overnight value. You are building these things. You are investing, you're pouring in. And I'm sure just like us, you've done many additional things in the last couple of years and probably a lot of them completely flopped, failed, or just didn't work out the way they were designed. And people agreed to things and you agreed to things and you're like, hey, this isn't what we talked about. This isn't the way we were planning, you know? And then, so then you have to try, fail, adjust. And that's what this entire process is about, but it's not going to happen overnight. It's not, you know, well, if I just find the exact right house or the exact right location or the exact right person, it will never work like that. Life doesn't work like that. And that's why you have to be very flexible and you have to just be cognizant of the fact of, look, this is what's available today. I'm going to make these decisions today. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to put one foot in front of another. It doesn't mean that I might not have to take a couple steps back. That always happens, but you're going to keep moving forward, fighting forward, falling forward, failing forward, and adjusting. And what is so incredible, it is so surreal. You know, we had these dreams and hopes and goals and visions. But before we moved, I had a very successful construction company, and I had to like completely fold everything up like almost overnight. And, you know, so I had built that for 5 years and had to leave all my construction equipment on my trucks and all these different things. And, you know, and you're stuck with this little nest egg and you're moving this young family. And at the time we had 3 little boys, you know, and you're moving and you're like, wow, you know, I got to take care of this wife and these 3 beautiful children. And I'm starting over again from scratch, and you do it. And what is so fascinating is here we are 10 years into the future. My oldest son is literally building his dream home, you know, on our property. We were able to purchase the property next door. And if you told me 10 years ago, well, first off, I was just like, we just got to get out of here. And I don't care where we live, as long as it's not here. You know what I mean? And 10 years removed, like every dream and goal. Now it's not exactly how we envisioned it or exactly what we thought, but in most aspects, it's 1,000 times better than we ever could have hoped or dreamed. But it's just one, it's stepping out in faith. It's putting one foot in front of the other, and it's working every single day, like scratching and clawing and having that focus and writing down your goals. And even if it's, you write them down and never look at them again, but it's going through that process and not stopping. And the doors of opportunity open. you know, we do something called private family banking, and it's more about like legacy capital in the sense of old school real world capitalism is predicated on capital. And what's capital? Savings, right? So you have to have the capital, and you do that by saving. Once you have that capital, opportunities present themselves. And then you're like, oh, now I can pick. Like, wow, well, I have an opportunity here. I have four opportunities. So let's do some research. Let's drill down into these things. And where do I want to utilize my capital? And that works with money and dollars and fiat and all this stuff. But that works with all of your skill and all of your value. And as you are analyzing your opportunities and saying, okay, well, I'm going to invest 20% of my effort over here. I'm going to invest, this looks really great. You know what? I'm going to kind of shift gears. I'm going to invest 90% of my effort over there. And the doors just continue, the opportunity continues to open up. And this is why building community and going parallel and creating community is so important, because the only way that these opportunities are going to continue to present themselves is if we can work outside of the bureaucracy, outside of the right-left paradigm. Another thing, you can probably speak to this. You know, I'm apolitical when it comes to all this federal election stuff. I think you are too, right? And we're and you're talking about how in Oregon and Pacific Northwest, it's going to be like Harris wall signs everywhere, right? And I'm not a MAGA, I'm not a Trump or anything, but you know what? I feel a whole lot, I know this is going to sound weird, I feel a whole lot better if I see a bunch of Trump signs.
Oh yeah, exactly. Those are, I mean, I can get along with those people. Like we have something in common. We have something in common is that we have a lot more in common. I have a lot more in common with those people, which is really interesting because I don't know, man. It's just like, cause it's like, there was a time where all the blue haired Harris Walls people, they were against the pharmaceutical industries. They were against war. They were like, there was a time where it's like all the hippies, like living in Eugene, Oregon, which is like the hippie capital of the world. It's like, what's going on, you guys? Like 6 months ago, you hated corporations and the pharmaceutical industry, and now you can't get enough of it. What is going on here? So it's like, I don't know, man. There's like, I'm a hippie at heart, but not now. It's like, I'm a gun-toting hippie, dude. I don't know. That's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I've always kind of been more conservative-minded, I would say. But like,
yeah,
it's just crazy, dude. It's so crazy that it's just like, none of it even means anything anymore at that level. Whereas it's just a clown show, literally. It's just a clown show. There's no political solution to this. We have to do it on the ground level. And then we can't fix the world. We can't save everybody. We can't change anybody's mind. And it's a waste of effort to do it. And so it's just up to us to kind of just focus on what we can affect and change right in our immediate surroundings. And that's all there is to it. Yeah.
And what's fascinating about that is, let's say there is a political solution.
Sure.
Let's say there's a political solution. I don't believe there is, but let's say there is. As we build this parallel community, society, create friendships, create networks and whatnot, if supposedly that whole paradigm is true, as we're doing that, it will effectively change that end result from the bottom up. Because as we're communing with like-minded people, working together, building, helping each other and doing all these things, if any of this, like if we can stop this existential threat by pushing a button on a machine, like that will still play out. That'll still play out. Like being autonomous and working outside of the system and working together and networking together through barter and all these other things that are going to be absolutely essential as they continue with the CBDC and all this other stuff. If voting does anything or means anything, it will still play out for the better of our society, the better of our community, the better of our country. It will still happen because we are fundamentally who we are. We believe so much in who we are and what we believe. We're living it out every day. And so the fruit of that will still affect people that think that pushing a button on a machine does something.
Exactly. It's just, it's, You know, I mean, maybe, who knows, dude? I don't know. Maybe there'll be some magical thing that happens. But, you know, I've been joking. Like, I don't know, man. I'm kind of joking. But, I mean, kind of not really. But, like, okay, fine. Let's get Kamal in there. Let's do it. Let's get Kamal in, and we'll just have another 4 years of just insanity, and let's just wake everybody up. I mean, the last 4 years have woken a lot of people up. And so let's just do another 4 years, and we'll just wake the rest of everybody up. And then what? Right. It's like,
well, you know, that's my whole fear with a conservative insurgence in the district of criminals and all these things is the largest tyrannical destruction happens under air quotes conservative leadership. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's the most disturbing part of all of it is our freedoms evaporate faster because everybody's under like, oh, well, we're safe now. Everything's okay. The right people are running the insane asylum now, you know, and it never plays out that way.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's really interesting when you pay attention to it, like under Trump, they like got rid of bump stocks and there's like a lot of stuff that kind of went the opposite direction. And then under Biden, it's like we got our bump stocks back and the pistol braces and Roe versus Wade got overturned. It's like, whoa, dude, what is going on here? And so, you know, they can enact a lot of like more conservative policy when they have a Democratic leadership in a federal position. But it's also like, you know, right now with like the Biden administration, everybody's just scrutinizing the government. They're pointing their fingers. They're like, you're not getting away with anything. We got your number. We know exactly what you're up to. And then, you know, watch Trump gets put back in and then everybody's just going to bow down and worship the government again and just be like, oh yes, steady government. Yes. Thank you. And so I don't know, man, there's an argument to be made that like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just along for the ride. I have no dog in the fight. I don't care either way. It's going to be insane. So
we had the largest extermination of U.S. citizens and it happened in Las Vegas. And talk about something that got erased from history and reality. And that's all around that whole bump stock thing. But I mean, yep. I nobody knows what happened and nobody will ever know what happened there with that whole deal. And I mean, that is some really heavy stuff. And it's kind of like really crazy and we'll never know what happened there. And I mean,
exactly. Well, between that and then the other, probably one of the biggest disasters that's happened in United States history was the Maui situation, yeah. The Maui fire. And who was the police chief that was in charge of both of those? It was the same guy.
Exactly.
Dude. Yeah. So I have intimate knowledge about that situation because are you familiar with Unjected? Unjected.com? So this is, I'll try not to get into too much here because YouTube doesn't like us very much, but it's basically a dating site for people that chose not to undergo the medical intervention.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm involved with that and the founder lives on Maui. And so she was like, you know, she was one of the main people reporting on that whole situation and wrote a book or co-authored a book that I helped edit and everything. And so like, we know that situation inside and out. And that's one of the big interesting parts. It's like, you know, the nepotism of like the same guy just happened to be in charge of the two big cover-ups of these tragic events. You know, it's very interesting how that works. So anyway, sorry, YouTube. I love you, YouTube.
Very interesting. Yeah.
I love you, YouTube. I had nothing but respect.
So Scott, man, so you're in Tennessee. You've relocated. You've been there a couple years now.
Yeah. So I got here Cinco de Mayo, 2022 is when I arrived. And it's just been like this. It's just been amazing, man. Like, I don't know. I'm just in awe and just living in complete gratitude every day for just, you know, the place I found myself, you know, between the amazing people, the community, the businesses and the opportunities. And it's just unreal. So but you're right. I feel like I'm just kind of just establishing myself, getting my feet on the ground. I'm already looking at, okay, so what's like my 5-year plan? Like I would love to kind of be outside of the city. You know, I'm currently like in the city, like just a little west of downtown. But you know, it's a pretty good setup that I have right now. And, you know, so I don't know, man, like I'm just very excited where this journey's taken me. So it's just, it's been pretty powerful.
So what do you got cooking? I think you got something called Clip Genie or something.
Clip Genie. Yeah. I'd love to talk about Clip Genie. So this is, it's a podcast tool that, are you familiar with the No Agenda show? No Agenda podcast.
Yeah. Yep. Adam Curry.
Exactly. So they have this tool called, it was called Bingit.io. Bingit.io. So I've used it several times, and for your audience, basically what it is it's this guy, Sir Deanonymous, Dean, out of the UK, developed this tool because he was a No Agenda fan, and No Agenda is a show that's been around for 17 years, and they report on all the current events, do two shows a week. So over the course of 17 years, they have this massive collection of like every news story, every topic, like anything that's gone on over the last 17 years, they've covered it, and they've got a very, they do deep dives on all of it, and they have like very good perspectives on it, and they have all these like clips, and it's just an extremely valuable resource. But if you're a consumer of the podcast or a listener of the podcast, you're like, God, they talked about this back in like 2013, but I would have no way of knowing when or where that episode was. So Dean developed this tool, Bingit.io, which allowed you to, he basically transcribed all of their episodes and created a searchable database where you can type in any word or phrase, and you can find, it'll list all the episodes where that word or phrase was listed. You can go in and click on it and listen to the episode from that point. I was like, damn. So this is
doing this without LLM.
Yeah, there's no LLM. It's basically just transcription. So we basically just transcribe. Oh. Oh, yeah. So he developed that for, and then so No Agenda's audio only. So I reached out to Dean because I was like, man, this is amazing. I feel like I know a lot of people that would want something like this. Is there a way that you could do this for video podcasts as well? He's like, yeah, sure. Let me look into it. So he did all the legwork and was able to develop a tool that allows now for like a YouTube channel or a Rumble channel to create a searchable database for people's shows. So we've kind of, I'll say he's done all the tech and I do like the I'm like the hype man for it. And I'm the one that's like, you know, I'm the podcaster. So I'm like, hey, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? So another suggestion was, okay, that's cool that we have like this searchable database and you can play the clip, but wouldn't it be cool if we could then export a clip? Like, let's say you really liked that when they were talking about Obama in like 2016 about the one thing, I don't even know. And it's like, you can take that and make a clip and share it on social media. And he's like, okay, so we developed that too. So now that's basically what Clip Genius turned into, is the ability to, for a show, if they want to have this functionality either for themselves and their producers and especially their audience, to be able to then search and to create clips of the show. So it's a pretty powerful tool. And like right now we're kind of in the infant stages. We have Grand Theft World as like our first official client. My show Rebunked, you can search through that, rebunked.clipgenie.com. gtw.clipgenie.com if you guys want to go play around with it. But it's pretty cool. So now, yeah, we're just at the point now where we're trying to have shows on board, because we have to like work with the show to, you know, utilize their content to do it. And there's costs on our end for onboarding. Like we have to basically ingest all of their content, which means like basically downloading it and then using a transcription service, which that I believe is using some sort of AI. Like we've tested a few different transcription services, and really the most important thing is accuracy. And so there's like this one company that we use that is by far the most accurate when it comes to transcribing, like, you know, the episodes themselves. And so that gives you the most like robust searchable databases when you have like accurate transcription. So, but yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. And it's like, it's one of those things. It's like, I can't believe nobody's ever came up with this before. So we're working on, yeah, we're working on like just working with different shows and trying to get them onboarded with it. And we're looking for ways to cut the costs, because it is kind of it's an investment for a show. Well, it depends on how long the show's been around. Like it's, you know, we're, for a show like for example, like the Alex Jones Show or something, that's like tens of thousands of hours worth of content. Like that's a lot to get going. You know what I mean? And so, but yeah, we're figuring it out as we go. And we've already had a bunch of other companies reach out to us, different use cases than we ever could have imagined. Like there's a company who does like continuing education courses for the dental industry, and they want to have the ability to like keyword search, like in their online courses. Ooh, and like, okay, cool. Yeah. Let's enter. And yeah. And we're talking to a few other people that, yeah. So it's cool. It's good stuff, man. And so we're,
yeah, that's cool.
So, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, and then,
So that was your idea.
Well, I can't take, Dean's the one that invented it. He invented it. And I just basically said, well, hey, can we take this and do this with it? And sure. So it's been a really cool like collaboration. And he's so awesome. Cause he's just like, every time I go to him with like, hey, can we try this? He's always like, leave it to me. And I'm like, yes, dude, he's a genius.
So it's a powerful tool because especially when you have something long form, like Grand Theft World, you know, like,
yes,
there's not a lot of people that get to invest that kind of time every week. But if you can just split that up into bite-sized chunks and say, you know, your brother, like my brother, I don't know if your brother, if you have a brother, but if you don't, I have a brother and, you know, he's super normie and everything. And he's probably not listening to this. He's probably never listened to any of these, but be like, hey man, remember that thing? And when you can remember when I told you about this, and then you can send him like a 10 or a 15 minute clip with all the provenance and everything. And you're like, yeah, that thing, you know, there it is. And like, oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Richard, and those of you that aren't familiar with Grand Theft World, like Richard Grove is he calls himself a forensic historian that knows every tiny detail about like every single history thing, the stuff that they didn't teach us in school. He's just like such a mind-blowing genius. And he loves Clip Genie because he's always like, ooh, I want, like, when do we talk about this? When do we talk about like Cecil Rhodes? And he types it in. It's like, oh yeah, look at all these episodes. We've already talked about this. Here's the clip. Here's the, you know, it's, and so he loves it. And so it's a really good tool for podcasts. Producers, like if you're out there making clips or if you're like wanting to know which episode you talked about this or that, and it's really cool stuff. Yeah, so
very cool.
Yeah man, totally. And and then the only other project, if you don't mind, like I could just talk a little bit about it. I've got this musical project that I just put out. It's called so I've been working on this album for about the last year and a half, and it's finally out there. There's some vulgarity in it, so for your Christian audience, I'm sorry, but it's like there's like a song that I directed towards all of the musicians that sold out over the all the stuff of the last few years that sold out, and so it's a kind of an intense diss track against them with some vulgarity, but the rest of the album's really smooth and fun and really exciting, and it's like it's very professionally produced. I have made music videos for all of it, and it's at rebunkedrecords.com if you guys want to check that out. It's totally legit. So
like, do you have any, like, did you have a musical background before?
Yeah. I played guitar my whole life, and I was in a band out in Oregon called Hot Piranha, which is also featured on the album, but they're good guys, great musicians. We kind of lost all our momentum. We were actually doing some cool stuff. We were doing shows, and we recorded some, we made some studio recordings, and we were like featured in like a front page full color thing in one of the biggest newspapers in Oregon. Like we were really getting momentum, and then COVID happened and we wiped off the map. You know what I mean? And so, but yeah, you know, we still played through all of that, like as most we could, but yeah, I've always been a musician. And, but this is the first, like, this is my first solo project. And really the first time I ever like was very intimately involved of every stage of the production, like music production process. And it was a very fun experience. And then the music videos are really fun too. Like that was awesome. Creating, like, you know, most people release an album, they make like one video for like a single or two. I got videos for all the songs. So there you go. Wow. Setting myself apart, man. Not messing around. So there you go. Yeah.
So if people want to get more information on Scott Armstrong, where can they find you, Scott?
Okay, cool. So probably the best link would be my link tree, but it's libertylinks.io/rebunked. And I can send you all this stuff so you can need that.
Yeah,
but libertylinks.io/rebunked basically takes you to every single thing that I'm involved with, from the music to the podcast, social media, like everything. Even stuff, there's so much I haven't even mentioned on this show. Like I stay pretty busy. So there you go.
That is great. Yeah, that's how you get to reinvent yourself and continue to build community. So if you had any kind of, there are just tens of thousands of people we get emailed on a weekly basis, people that are considering relocating. And a lot of times when you relocate, you are reinventing yourself because of the Prussian schooling system, they've trained us and you got a niche and you you just develop your and hone your niche, you know, and that's the value you bring to the market. And it's this tiny slice of pie. So now if you want to relocate, you know, they better have that pie and they better be missing that tiny little slice, because that's really the only way you can move there is if, you know, you just continue to do what you've always ever done, right? Instead of reinventing yourself, you know, when you're changing climates, you know, everything changes. Like we went from a normal four seasons with colder winters that I disliked to a warm climate that's predominantly warm all year round. So you're kind of changing everything. Yep. And for people that are considering this, do you have any parting thoughts or wisdom for them? What would you tell them?
Okay. So what I would say is like, don't let any of those limiting thoughts hold you. If you're really being compelled to go somewhere, like if you're not thriving where you're at, then sometimes a change is needed, right? And although, you know, there is a saying in recovery, we say, they call it geographical changes. If you think moving somewhere else is going to fix all your problems, sometimes you can run into situations with that. So really kind of analyze, you know, what your motive is. If there is an opportunity elsewhere, I'm a proponent of taking that opportunity, but we say, you know, wherever you go, there you are. So if you're going somewhere else to fix your problems, that may be more of an internal thing, but if you've really got an opportunity or a vision of you moving somewhere else, I'm a big proponent of that, but not limiting what you're actually capable of, like holding you back. You know what I mean? Like if you have like a tech background and there's no tech jobs, it's like, hey, you might be able to build something. But really what it is, the community is the key to the whole thing. You find your like-minded people there, whether it's like the Freedom Cell Network, the Bertaria Network, Bertaria Times, the Make Americans Free Again, like a local political group or like a libertarian group or a homesteading group or whatever it is. Like just like find some sort of community and then look for ways to be of service to that community. And that's all it is. That's all it is to it. Like you can, but you do have a tech background. I'm sure some of these people need help with their websites. You know what I mean? It's just like there's a need that you can fill no matter what, but it's all about finding that community first and kind of just going from there. That's really, because that's what I did. The first thing I moved out here, I didn't really get into this, but like, it was like, I just started hosting meetups for all these different groups that I was involved with. And that's where all my friends came from. And the guy that I do decks with right now, I met through those initial meetups that I was hosting. And it's like, all you got to do, like, don't be too intimidated by it. Like I would call the local park service and I would rent a picnic area at one of the local parks. And then I would like make a post in that community and say, hey, picnic, potluck, bring your own food, come hang out, you know, pick a time, date, location, make a flyer, put it out there and people show up. And that's like where my like current friend circle came from. So it's like, that's just how you do it. So,
and I can vouch for that working because we started doing that. I think we're on our sixth meetup and we've been doing the potluck thing and it's just been fabulous. And if you're unaware of our local Northeast Texas meetups, go to thetexasboys.com. Make sure you're on our email list. You will get notified. We should be having another one in October. Nice. And, you know, just as a reminder, we are completely demonetized. And so if you want to support the show, I will put the link for all of Scott's information down below. And you can check us out at thetexasboys.com. The new website is getting ready to roll out and there'll be all different kind of new stuff and better payment options and all that kind of cool stuff. But Scott, man, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate what you're doing. Thanks for getting the word out and just interviewing really important, interesting people. And I appreciate you coming on the Fearless Podcast.
Yeah, man. TD, thank you so much. I love what you're doing as well. You keep up the great work and let's just connect again for sure.
Awesome. Now, y'all remember, stay fearless, my friends.